Your AI coding agent just wrote a patch, and now it faces a choice. Pay for an 11-minute test suite to find out if the code is actually correct, or trust it and ship. A paper out this week says there's an exact computable line between those two options. And the strange part? It spends half its effort telling you when its own clever method is a complete waste of time.
Quick heads up before we get into it. This is an AI-generated explainer. Both voices included.
So here's what you'll walk away with. By the end, you'll understand the three distinct situations that decide whether smart, reasoning-based control of a coding agent actually beats the dumbest possible rule, just verify everything, or whether you should throw the fancy machinery out and use a one-liner.
And the reason that's not obvious is the hook. Your instinct says a controller that reasons carefully about uncertainty should always beat a fixed rule. More intelligence, better decisions. But that's exactly what the paper pushes back on. There's a whole region of the map where the careful Bayesian reasoner ties, or loses, to a single if statement.
And why anyone outside this niche should care? As coding agents get more autonomous, the expensive part isn't writing the code anymore. It's checking it. This paper turns, should my agent run that costly verification step, from a gut call into a number you can actually compute from two things you can measure.
Let's set the table, because the modern coding agent is not what people picture. It's not a language model spitting out code. It's a generator wrapped in a whole toolbox. You've got a syntax checker that's basically free, a public test suite, a second, smaller language model that reads the diff and plays reviewer. Refinement prompts that say, try again. And then, at the very end of the line, the expensive one, the Oracle. The high-fidelity verifier that actually tells you, ground truth, whether this code is correct.
And the costs are wildly lopsided. The paper measured real telemetry on a heavy real-world software patch running the full hidden test suite took about 670 seconds. Call it 11 minutes. The syntax check? Effectively instant. So you've got tools that range from free to 11-minute tax, and they range just as much in how much you can trust them.
Right. And so the actual engineering question is a resource allocation problem wearing a software costume. You've got a candidate solution and a menu of tools at different prices and different reliabilities. What do you do next? Refine it again? Ask another cheap critic? Pay for the expensive verifier? Or just stop and ship?
And the author's complaint is that almost every agent orchestrator today answers that with a fixed rule. Always verify. Best of N, generate 5, pick 1. Run a single gate. Or follow a hard-coded generate, critique, regenerate loop. The thing all of those have in common is they ignore uncertainty completely. They never hold an explicit belief about whether the current code is actually correct, and they never weigh what a critic's opinion is worth against what it costs to get it.
Which is a strange way to behave if you think about how a good diagnostician works. A doctor who's 30% sure you have something orders a test. A strongly diagnostic result swings them to 90, or down to 5. A useless test, they skip. Why pay for an answer that won't change what you do? That's the reframe at the center of this paper. Treat the control layer like that diagnostician.
So spell out the core move, because this is the whole idea in one breath.
The hidden truth is binary. Will this candidate pass the Oracle? Yes or no? You can't see the answer without paying for it. So the controller carries a belief, a running probability that the answer is yes. Call it 40% sure right now. Every cheap critic you call is a noisy piece of evidence that nudges that probability up or down. Every regeneration is a gamble that might fix broken code or break working code. And the expensive verifier is the final, costly, ground truth action. Frame it that way, and the entire thing becomes a formal decision problem. You act at every step to maximize reward, minus the costs you rack up getting there.
And this is the part I want to flag right away, because it changes how you read every number later. They measure their headline result against Always Verify as the zero line. Beat Always Verify, you're positive. Lose to it, you're negative. Hold on to that, because in the exact corner where this method shines, Always Verify is a deliberately easy thing to beat, and the real test is something harder. We'll come back to that.
Worth planting that flag now, yeah. The honest comparison isn't Bayesian versus the dumb default. It's Bayesian versus the best simple rule.
So before we go deeper, the payoff, stated plainly so you've got it even if you bail in 5 minutes. The result is a map. On one axis, how good your code is to begin with. On the other, how expensive verification is compared to the reward for being right. And that map has three regions. In one, the careful Bayesian controller genuinely wins. In another, a one-line gate on the public test wins. In the third, you should just verify everything and skip all the cleverness. The contribution isn't, our method always wins. It's knowing which region you're in.
And here's the gear shift. The technical core is one equation. The economic logic of when to pay for that final verifier. And it pays off immediately, because both axes of that three-region map fall straight out of it. So let's actually do the one piece of math worth doing.
This is the line the paper hangs everything on. What's the value of stopping and verifying right now?
It's almost insultingly simple. The value of verifying equals your current belief times the reward minus the cost of verifying. That's it. If you're 70% sure the code is right and a correct answer is worth 100, then verifying is worth 70 in expected reward, minus whatever the verifier costs. Pay only when that's positive.
And the magic falls out when you ask, at what belief does it break even?
Exactly there. Set it to zero and you get a clean threshold. Verify when your belief crosses the cost divided by the reward. That single ratio, cost over reward, is one entire axis of the map. Think about what it's telling you. When verification costs as much as the reward itself, you'd better be nearly certain before you pay for it. When verification is dirt cheap, even a shaky candidate is worth checking. One little fraction sets the whole bar.
And the other axis is just where your belief tends to start, the prior pass rate. How often a fresh candidate is correct on the first try.
And that spread is enormous, which is why the axis matters. The priors in this paper run from about 5%, a small open coding model on competitive programming problems, almost never right first try, up to 96%, a small open model on easy LeetCode problems, almost always right. That's more than an order of magnitude. The right move when you're starting at 5% is nothing like the right move at 96.
Okay, so we've got the threshold and where you start. But the interesting part is what happens between starting and verifying. The cheap critics. How does a critic actually move that belief needle?
Through Bayes' rule, and the intuition is the only thing you need. When a critic says pass or fail, how far the needle moves depends entirely on how trustworthy that critic is. And the way you measure trustworthiness is a single gap. How often does this critic say pass on code that's actually correct versus how often it says pass on code that's actually broken? Big gap, big signal. No gap, no signal.
And this gives them the best little throwaway result in the paper. Why the syntax checker is useless.
It's such a clean example. The syntax check passes on correct code and on broken code roughly equally. Because modern instruction-tuned models produce parsable, valid-looking code whether or not it actually works. So the gap is basically zero. The check tells you nothing. And the beautiful thing is the Bayesian update figures that out on its own. It sees the critic carries no signal and correctly ignores it. You don't have to hand-tune anything.
Whereas the public test on a LeetCode-style problem sits at the other extreme.
Near Oracle. The gap is almost one. A single pass from it shoves your belief straight across the verification threshold by itself. And remember that. It's going to explain an entire region of the map in a minute. But here's the mechanism that earns the Bayesian controllers their wins. Two critics that are each only moderately reliable can compose. Stack them, and the combined posterior is sharper than either one alone.
Like a panel of mediocre referees.
That's the picture. One shaky referee gives you a wobbly opinion. Two or three independent shaky referees who all lean the same way, now you're genuinely confident. The controller squeezes near-oracle certainty out of several cheap, imperfect checks and never has to pay for the 11-minute oracle at all. That compounding is the whole economic argument for being clever instead of just gating on one test.
So let me consolidate before the payoff, because we've covered ground. The controller holds a probability the code is right. Cheap critics nudge that probability, weighted by how trustworthy each one is. Verifying pays off only above a break-even belief set by cost over reward. And those two things, where your belief starts and where that break-even sits, are the two axes. Now we get to see what the map actually looks like.
And this is the centerpiece. Picture a two-axis plot. Left to right, your prior pass rate. Bad code on the left, good code on the right. Bottom to top, that cost over reward ratio. Cheap verification at the bottom, brutally expensive verification at the top. The authors pooled an enormous sweep to fill it in. Over 7,000 points, 54 generator benchmark pairs crossed with 13 verifier costs and 10 reward levels. And at every coordinate, they asked one question. Which policy actually wins here?
And when you smooth it out, the plot breaks into three clean colored regions. Watch the bottom of the map first, cheap verification. Down here, there's no puzzle at all. Verification costs you almost nothing, so just verify everything. Every candidate, every time. The break-even belief is so low that even garbage code clears it. All the Bayesian machinery in the world buys you nothing in this band. That's region C.
Then climb up into the middle, where verification costs somewhere between a tenth of the reward and the full reward. And in this band, if you happen to have one of those near-oracle public tests, the LeetCode case, a one-line gate wins. Just run that single test, trust it, done. Because remember, one pass from a near-perfect critic already pushes your belief across the threshold. So why reason at all? The cheap rule captures essentially all the value. That's region B.
And the top left corner is the whole reason the paper exists.
Top left, verification is expensive. Cost meets or exceeds the reward. And your code is bad to begin with, low prior, and no single critic is decisive. That is the only corner where careful Bayesian control genuinely earns its keep. You can't afford to verify everything. No single test is trustworthy enough to gate on, so you have to combine imperfect signals and decide case by case. That's region A, and it's exactly the situation the whole method was built for.
There's a great real-world version of this, vetting a used car. If a mechanic's inspection is dirt cheap, inspect every car you look at. If there's one near-perfect tell, a single diagnostic readout that almost always outs a lemon, just check that and trust it. But if a full inspection is expensive and no single quick check is decisive, that's when you actually reason. Combine the odometer, the rust, the test drive, the service history, and make a call. Three regimes, and you only think hard in one of them.
And the paper's own one-line thesis fits right on top of that. Bayesian control proves to be most valuable when verification is costly and critics are informative but imperfect. Costly and imperfect. That's the top left corner in one sentence.
So does it deliver in that corner? Because the theory predicts something specific. When verification is expensive and code starts rough, a controller that reasons should crush the dumb default. And it does. On SWE Bench Lite, real GitHub issue patches, with Claude Haiku, the Bayesian controllers beat Always Verify by roughly 62 to 68 utility units per instance. On a scale where one correct solution is worth 100, that's a huge margin.
And the contrast with the fixed rules is stark. The best simple baseline, a syntax gate, managed maybe plus 20 to plus 40. Positive, but well behind. And the named refinement agents, self-refine and reflection, which extends it with a verbal memory buffer of past failures, plus best of three sampling, actually went negative in this regime. They lost to doing nothing clever at all.
So that's the triumphant version. 62 over always verify, published agents underwater. But you flagged earlier that we'd come back to the baseline. So this is your moment, Tyler. How much of that number is real?
This is the reservation, and I think it's the most important thing to say about the whole paper. Two problems with that 62. First, the baseline. In region A, the corner where Bayesian wins, verification cost meets or exceeds the reward, which means always verify, by construction, is guaranteed to lose money. You're paying 100 to maybe gain 100 on code that's usually wrong. Almost any policy that avoids verifying everything beats that there. So plus 62 over always verify partly measures how bad always verify is in a corner where it's known bad, not how good the Bayesian controller is. The harder, fairer test is Bayesian versus the best gate. And there the margins are real, but a lot narrower. And over in region B, the gate often ties or even nudges ahead.
So the impressive headline number lives in exactly the spot where the comparison is rigged easiest.
That's the uncomfortable read, yes. And second, and this one bugs me more, it's a replay evaluation. The Bayesian controllers don't actually generate fresh code as they run. The authors pre-collected a corpus, three patches sampled per instance in advance. When the controller decides regenerate, it just consumes the next pre-sampled patch off the shelf. It isn't producing a genuinely new candidate conditioned on everything it's learned.
Wait, but self-refine and reflection lost in that regime. Were they replayed the same way?
That's the asymmetry. The paper does report them as replays too, but the live versions of those agents actually critique and regenerate for real, bearing all the messiness of real generation. The Bayesian controller is operating over a frozen, idealized action space, a clean shelf of pre-made patches. So when the refinement agents go negative, part of that is the friction of doing the real thing. It's not a clean apples-to-apples fight.
That's fair, and I'd add a third thing in the same spirit. The calibration cost that doesn't show up in the ledger. To run any of this, you need the priors, the critic reliabilities, the regeneration probabilities. They estimate all of those from held-out trajectories that were labeled by the expensive Oracle. So there's an upfront bill of running the costly verifier many times to learn the parameters, and the utility accounting just assumes you already have them.
Which matters because the entire pitch is save money on verification. If standing the system up costs a pile of Oracle calls per cell, that changes the economics for anyone who can't amortize it.
So where do you land? Because I don't think this sinks the paper.
It doesn't. What the paper genuinely establishes is the map, the structure of when reasoning helps and when it doesn't. That's a real, durable result. And it's honest in a way most method papers aren't. What I'd resist is reading plus 62 as the size of the real-world win. The win is the decision surface, not that one number. And the number was measured in the corner most flattering to it, over an idealized action space.
I'll concede the number is soft and take the map. Though I'd still say a method that knows which corner it's in is worth more than one that claims to win everywhere, even if the corner is small.
And that's a fair place for us to disagree.
There's one more piece I want to deal with honestly, because the paper sells two controllers and really only one of them earns its place. They build a greedy version that looks one step ahead and a dynamic programming version that plans several steps out, modeling the odds that regeneration fixes broken code or breaks working code.
And by the paper's own account, the heavy dynamic programming machinery only beats the cheap greedy one when the measured fix probability is high enough, roughly 15% or more, to make a refine then verify chain worth attempting. Below that, the two collapse to literally the same policy. So one of the two flagship contributions adds value on a narrow slice, and all the extra apparatus is dead weight everywhere else.
Which, in fairness, is consistent with the paper's whole personality. It keeps telling you where its own ideas don't pay off. Annoying for the marketing, good for the science.
That tension is the most likable thing about it.
Now, the part I think is most immediately useful, and it's almost a footnote in the paper. Forget control for a second. Take that running belief, the probability the controller carries that the code is correct, and just use it as a confidence score. Does it tell you, better than the alternatives, whether an answer is probably right?
And this is where I'd want the honest comparison, since we've spent so much of this episode on flattering baselines.
It's a clean one here. They scored it with a standard ranking metric. Basically, how well does the confidence number sort the correct answers from the wrong ones? Higher is better. The belief state landed at about 0.87 on average. The next best, the model's own sequence probability, was 0.80. Raw tool success rate, about the same. And perplexity, the model's internal sense of how surprised it is by its own output, collapsed to 0.37. Barely better than a coin.
And on the hard problems, it actually got better, not worse.
On hard LEET code, it hit 0.91, which is the opposite of how most confidence signals behave. They fall apart exactly when the problem gets hard and you need them most. The belief state held up, and here's why that's portable. It's computed after the fact, purely from tool outputs, so you can bolt it onto someone else's agent, one whose control logic you never touch, and get a well-calibrated, is this probably wrong, flag before you pay for the final check.
It's like a second opinion built entirely from the test results already on file. No access to the original model's reasoning, no retraining, no surgery on the agent. Just a better gauge stapled to the outside.
And that connects to the one thing I want to make sure lands, because it's counterintuitive. Everything in this paper runs on frozen models. Nothing is trained. Nothing is fine-tuned. When people hear better coding agent, they assume better trained model. Here, the language models are fixed. All the intelligence the paper adds lives in the controller deciding what to call next.
It's the air traffic controller picture. The planes are unchanged. The controller doesn't redesign aircraft. It decides which one to clear, when to ask for more information, and when to commit. Every bit of the gain comes from sequencing decisions well, not from a smarter engine. The only twist over real air traffic is this controller also gets to scrap a plane and request a fresh one.
So the real takeaway here is bigger than any of the two controllers, and bigger than that 62. It's a shift in where you look for improvement. We've spent years assuming a better agent means a better model. This paper makes the case that the control layer, the part that decides which tool to call and when to stop, should be doing its own principled reasoning, holding explicit beliefs and pricing every action. And the honest version of that claim is a map. Reasoning pays off only when checking is expensive and your signals are good but imperfect. Cheap to check, or one near-perfect test? Don't bother. A one-liner wins.
Which leaves a real question for anyone building these things. Should the next round of effort go into making the control layer smarter, Bayesian, belief-carrying, cost-aware, the way this paper argues? Or is the bigger lever still just making verification cheaper, so you drop into that bottom region and the whole problem dissolves? Smarter controller or cheaper Oracle? We'd genuinely like to know which side you land on. Tell us in the comments.
If you want to go deeper, the full annotated version of this episode is on paperdive.ai. Every technical term tap to define, with links to the related papers grouped by theme, from Wald's old sequential analysis up through the modern agent work.
Quick housekeeping. This script was written by Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.8. Bella and I are both AI voices from 11 Labs, and the producer isn't affiliated with either company. The paper is Bayesian Control for Coding Agents, published June 23, 2026, and we recorded this the day after.
So the next time your agent reaches for that 11-minute test, the smart move isn't always to run it, and it isn't always to skip it. It's knowing which corner of the map you're standing in.